All rise. The Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio.
You may be seated. The first case on our calendar is 03-569, Brian Costin versus Consolidated Ceramic Products, Inc. Mr. Hastel.
May it please the Court. Mr. Chief Justice, Sean Hastel, on behalf of CCPI, this is a pleasure and an honor. This case asks the question. The first question must be addressed is, what is the allegedly dangerous activity Mr. Costin was involved in on the day of his accident? He was troweling or raking ton spray while in front of a moving robot. Under this court's case law dating back to Blankenship, the question becomes, who put Mr. Costin in front of the moving robot? Did Mr. Costin himself put him there, or was he directed by his employer to be there?
Counsel, I think your brief focuses on the third prong of Geno versus Five, does it not?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And that's, is there a modification in the law that you're urging, or is it that you're just arguing that the injured worker doesn't meet the test of the third prong?
The injured worker does not meet the test of the Fife-Van Fossen third prong. The 8th District Court of Appeals did not apply the Van Fossen-Fife third prong. They applied the dicta out of this court's decision in Gibson. And without interrupting, the timer is not working, and I'd like to reserve 7 minutes for rebuttal.
Sure.
The issue becomes under the third prong, under the Van Fossen-Fife third prong is, did the employer with the requisite knowledge act to put the employee in front of the known danger that was substantially going to cause him harm? Under Gibson, and as the 8th District has interpreted Gibson in this case, the court uses merely expected language. It doesn't use the required or did act to require language. And that is the problem, and that is why this court must reverse.
I guess that's the question that I have is, in looking at the third prong, you argue that the employer had to actually require him to enter the cage. And it seems to me, from the facts that you presented, that perhaps what we have is a jury question, and the reason it becomes a jury question is it's alleged by someone, and maybe it's agreed by both of you, that this employee was on the job for about a month, and the person who trained him, or one of his immediate supervisors, did the same thing. Went into the envelope, as it's described in your brief, and troweled the material while the robot was running. So wouldn't that at least get you to a jury, if those are the facts, and maybe that's disputed, but if those are the facts, wouldn't that get you to a jury on the third prong?
Well, actually, Your Honor, there is no question of fact here. If you look at the testimony, Brian Costin was never directed, expected, required, whichever term you want to use, by CCPI to go into the envelope while the robot was moving. The testimony is uncontradictory on that matter. He even testifies that he does not testify that he was directed. His best explanation is, I don't recall.
Was there an expectation on the part of the employer that he would go in there?
That he wouldn't?
No. Was there an expectation on the part of the employer that he would go in?
While the robot is moving? No. So even if the court were to apply the merely expectation test, which I don't believe it is, because I believe that's only dicta out of Gibson, the answer is no, we never expected. There was not one part of his function, not one part of his job where he had to be in front of a moving robot to do it. He could have stopped the robot. He could have used lockout, tagout.
Did he not learn from others that who had done that? A procedure to go in while the robot arm was still moving?
There was not. There was testimony by him that he had seen others do it. However, that was not a direction by CCPI. Watching co-employees do something is not sufficient. Acquiescence by the employer is not sufficient. If we look at the Van Fossen case...
Does that create an expectation by the employer that he would follow the procedure that other employees had followed?
I don't believe it does because, again, if we look at the teachings of this court, going back before Gibson and even in Gibson's language, the issue is, did they commit an intentional tort? Did they act? Did they mandate the action that was required? The issue is not expectation. If you look at the Gibson decision, where is the mere expectation test is alleged to have come from, this court holds that that drainage products put him in place of the hot exploding molten plastic. This court did not hold in Gibson. It is merely dicta. It did not hold mere expectation is the law. If you look at that case and read it in the totality, it states that the Van Fossen third prong is the law. It states that Fife is the law. It then, in a couple paragraphs, talks about mere expectation. But as Justice Pfeiffer, you pointed out in an article written 2 weeks after the decision came out, the key focus was the drainage products put the employee in front of the molten plastic, and that, the court found, was a question of fact, in place of the molten plastic here. There was no evidence in this record that CCPI put Mr. Constant in place of a moving robot.
But was he ever trained properly? He always watched his supervisor and other employees who performed the job like that. It would appear that he was never trained not to do the work as he did it.
He was trained for 3 weeks. He was in this position for a year and a half.
Okay. Now who trained him for the 3 weeks?
He was trained by Randy Griffith.
Okay.
For the 3 weeks, and during that time, he was never directed to go in front of a moving robot. The record does not provide any evidence that Randy Griffith directed him to go in front of a moving robot.
But did Randy Griffin perform the job that way by going in to the running robot when the robot was running?
There is apparently a question of fact over that issue, but Randy Griffith says that it is not necessary to do the job. The issue becomes not whether that is acquiescence conduct. That is watching co-employees. This court has never in any of its decisions said that the mere by watching other employees is employer's activities.
Well, counsel, wouldn't it be somewhat different in terms of applying a legal test or determining what it seems to me this just boils down to is whether there was enough to get to a jury on the third prong or not. It's one thing if a fellow fellow co-worker who just ignores a bunch of safety regulations with regularity and is showing off and all that kind of thing. But it's an entirely different matter if the person who trained you in the job and is alleged to be your supervisor, as I thought I read in one of the briefs, is stepping into the envelope while the robot is on and trolling the material. So if the person training you and is your supervisor shows you how to do the work in that fashion, that would seem like that ought to be enough to get you to a jury on the third prong.
I don't believe it is, Your Honor, because again, looking at the third prong, it requires the employer did act. The type of situation I believe you're applying is like the court did in furtherance of the business or responding at superior principles, which have never been used between two employees to impugn liability onto the employer.
Are the facts disputed on that question?
I believe that an individual
who trained him and was his supervisor did the same thing. Is that agreed to or is that in dispute?
No. He never trained him to do it that way. Nobody from CCPI ever said that you need to do your job in front of a moving robot. The issue comes down to whether or not the 8th District applied the right standard. The 8th District doesn't even come to that issue. They apply a mere expectation test. They take the court's dicta out of Gibson and apply a mere expectation test.
which is not the proper standard in light of the constitutional parameters. The issue, mere appreciation of a risk, like this court had in Van Fossen, where the employer created a stairway. They never mandated the employees created a stairway. In that case, the employees created a stairway where there was two alternatives, use the stairway created or use the other way to get to the top of the machine. In that case, this court held that because the employer did not mandate you use that stairway, and there was alternative methods, that was not an intentional tort. That's an acquiescence case. Mere expectation should not be the standard. This court has already held various times that mere appreciation of an injury, or mere appreciation, or likely to occur, or possibility, are all concepts that don't satisfy Fife or Van Fossen. How is mere expectation, which involves the same concepts, might, could, should, doesn't, they don't meet the same standard. They
was
don't
he,
meet what this
exception. Was he seen doing this procedure before by anyone?
I don't believe he was actually seen doing this procedure. He had been reprimanded for doing things too fast. He had been reprimanded because he fell through a hole at one point. But I don't believe he had been seen specifically doing this, which would then put knowledge on the employer.
So no one saw him and told him in management personnel that's not to be done any further, or that's not the way to do it. No one ever saw him do this?
Well, Your Honor, you're asking the court to prove, or the accident CCCI to prove a negative. They never directed him to do it this way. They told him, use his lockout, tagout. They told him, there is no reason to go in front of the robot while it's moving. I want to, because the timer's not working, I want to save
you
time
have,
for rebuttal.
A little more than 4 minutes. Just right now, you have 4 minutes and 3 seconds.
I'd like to save the remaining time for rebuttal, please.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Mason. Mr. Wakefield.
Good morning, Your Honors. The answer is yes. He was following the precise lead shown to him by his supervisor, Randy Griffith. The record is clear that Mr. Griffith had been in the envelope, that Mr. Griffith had troweled up material. The record is also clear that Mr. Griffith's supervisor, Mr. Lazari, testified on several occasions that workers, while the robot was running, were consistently in the envelope troweling up material. And there's a very good reason for them to do that. The reason is because these workers had to trowel up the material because if it were allowed to sit in the bottom of the tundish, it would harden and the job would not be done. Counsel opposing me specifically refers to the Gibson and the Hanna decision as dicta, but they are not dicta. They are a pronouncement from this court. While they may not contain actual syllabi, this court has spoken only twice since 1991 on the issue of intentional torts in Ohio. And in both of those instances, the specific prong that has been addressed has been the third prong. And in both of those instances, the pronouncement from this court has been that an expectation of the employer that an employee will do something is sufficient to present a jury question for the trier of fact. That is exactly what happened here. I was in the anteroom listening to the opening remarks, and one of the things that struck me was a remark by Chief Justice Moyer. And he said, in relation to the architects, that when we build forever. The same thing is true with respect to the law on stare decisis. When this court builds, when this court makes pronouncements, as it has in both Hanna and in Gibson, they build forever until perhaps the legislature changed, which has not occurred here. This court has laid out very specifically two tests. And without meaning to read back to you what you have already written, this court specifically said in both Hanna and Gibson, Hanna was quite explicit in its determination that a jury issue arises concerning the third element, the one we're discussing here, of the Fife test when sufficient credible evidence is presented that the employer merely expected the employee to engage in the dangerous task.
Well, counsel, the appellant urges that the Court of Appeals didn't even get to the third prong, or in dealing with the third prong, they turned it into something more than it is.
The Court of Appeals specifically indicated, and with regard to its opinion on page 13, it says, in addressing the third prong, that CCI submits that it did not require Mr. Costin to do the dangerous tasks. Such evidence, however, is not required to defeat summary judgment because a jury question is created if there is sufficient evidence that the employer merely expected the employee to engage in the dangerous task. Not only did they get to the third prong, they quoted this court directly in holding that a jury question did in fact exist. What appellant wants in this case is for this court to go back 15 years, for this court to reverse the two decisions and the only two decisions that have come from this court regarding the third prong of the intentional tort.
Counsel, what is your strongest support for the statement of the author of the Court of Appeals opinion that says, contrary to the judges, meaning the trial judge's finding, there is considerable dispute and the critical issue of whether CCPI acted to require Costin to enter the work envelope while the robot was running. What's the strongest evidence that indicates that the employer required your client to enter the robot area?
The requirement that Mr. Costin enter the robot area can be divided into two specific points. First, Mr. Lazzari testified that he, in fact, trained Mr. Costin by showing him what to do, and Mr. Costin was to follow his procedure. As Justice O'Donnell stated, there is specific reason to believe that there was an expectation that Mr. Costin would follow the lead. Therefore, he would be required to do what his employer did. On, if you'd like specific cites to the depositions.
No, I don't need that.
Okay.
We'll find that.
On several instances, Mr. Costin testified that his employer did it, that Mr. Lazzari sanctioned it, that fellow employees did it, and that no one ever chastised him, reprimanded him, or did anything to indicate that that was an improper means.
And at the time the accident occurred, the light curtains were not functioning, were they?
No. And they were not.
And CCPI knew that.
CCPI not only knew it, they had disconnected the light curtains. These light curtains were a fail-safe safety device designed explicitly to stop the robot in the event anyone went into this area.
The appellant argues that those were designed so that somebody accidentally, like another worker who wasn't in the area, couldn't get into the robot area, that the light curtains prevented them from moving into the area, but that there was a stop switch. No question, it was a stop switch, right? That the employee could stop the robot when the employee enters the area of the robot. Is there any dispute about that?
There wasn't a particular stop switch, Mr. Justice. There was a teach pendant that existed on the robot. There was evidence that, in fact, what would happen is that the employees would breach the light curtains, the robot would stop, they may do the troweling work, and then they would go back and they would reset it. So there is a stop sign that was on the floor, there was a light, but I don't specifically recall any testimony about a specific stop switch.
Because the curtains acted as the stop.
Precisely. The curtains didn't make any distinction between whether a person was inadvertently going in there or whether a person was intentionally going in there.
And the cause for the light curtains to be disabled was that they were malfunctioning, and that's the impression I got from reading the briefs. That it was not an intentional turning off of the light switch so that they wouldn't trigger the stoppage of the robot. They were malfunctioning and not repaired and were disabled as a result of a separate functional problem. Is that correct?
No, that's not precisely correct. The light curtains were turned off because they were stopping the robot during the production process. They were either stopping it because of a wiring malfunction, which the employer never fixed, or they were stopping it because of the spray, which was being done, infringed upon the curtains. But regardless, Mr. Costin's employer knew the day of the accident that those light curtains weren't working.
Everybody knew the light curtains weren't working.
Well, everyone did. And the question of whether or not Mr. Costin was told to do anything, there is no dispute at all that Mr. Costin called his employer on the day of the accident. He specifically said to his employer, Mr. Griffith, the light curtains still aren't working. Mr. Griffith didn't tell him to hand spray. Mr. Griffith didn't tell him to do anything else. Mr. Griffith specifically told him to go work with the robot, knowing, in fact, that people go into that area and trowel up the spray while the robot is running. So there is an acquiescence and, in fact, an affirmative act on the part of the employer to require Mr. Costin to go into this dangerous position or instrumentality.
Counsel, the light curtain really doesn't bolster your case one way or the other. That was an extra safety measure not required by any particular regulation.
It wasn't required by any particular regulation.
What does an employer or an employee, such as your client, working in this area, are there other duties that he has in addition to just standing there watching the robot, or is that his duty all day long, is to trowel up the imperfections that are left by the robotic device?
His duty is to make sure the product of CCPI, which is the evenly sprayed Tundish, is supplied to LTV. His duty is to do that in the most expeditious and cost-efficient manner so that his company can make money. And in fact, the way in which that is done is to make sure that the spray that goes down is pulled back up immediately and the container is in fact done once and done correctly. That is his duty. The robot is the initial applicator of the spray. The person is responsible for making sure that the product comes out fine. And that is Mr. Costin's duty on the day of the
accident. Is there any embellishment, modification, or tweaking of the third prong that is necessary at all in your view?
No. There's no embellishment, there's no tweaking. The third prong, as stated in Hanna and in Gibson by this court, is in fact exactly.
And your view is that the Court of Appeals did not enlarge upon it or in any way apply it beyond the understood parameters of the law as we know it up until today?
No. It is my opinion that the Court of Appeals did not expand upon the third prong. It is my opinion that the Court of Appeals was very careful in citing directly to the prong and citing directly to the test set forth for that prong. And for that reason, the prong itself should stand. Simply because the language of this court may not be stated in a syllabus does not mean that it's irrelevant or dicta. In a 5-2 decision less than 2 years ago.
Well, our rules have changed the importance of the syllabus anyway.
Right. And for that reason, the appellee would respectfully request that you simply take the law as it exists and put it in the form of a syllabus so that the rest of the world can have black letter law now to follow as opposed to.
So people need to worry about a syllabus even though we've said you don't need to worry about a syllabus.
That seems to be the case, Your Honor. So for all of those reasons, plaintiff appellee respectfully requests that Mr. Costin was, in fact, supposed to be in that area. He was, in fact, shown to be in that area. He was, in fact, expected to be in that area. And he, in fact, was in that area when the robot injured him. Defendant appellant knew it. They knew that the robot presented a dangerous condition and would cause injury. And notwithstanding all of that, a genuine issue of material fact exists as to whether or not they satisfied the third prong of the Fife test. We believe they did. We believe this matter should be remanded. And we believe the law, as it exists in Ohio, is set forth clearly and should be, in fact, codified in the syllabus. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Wakefield. Mr. Maisel, you've saved just about 4 minutes of your time.
Thank you. This court has seen the required prong in Van Fossen and Fife go from required to expect to expose to now in furtherance of the business. And by the way, employer, make sure all your co-employees are not doing something that merely could be expected to create a danger. That is not the test. The third prong, again, something pointed out earlier today, the Constitution. This is an exception to the constitutional immunity granted to the employers. It must be viewed strictly. The test this court has garnered over the years has been set forth as something that the employer has to mandate. They have to commit the intentional tort. They have to commit the act. The 8th District does not apply that test. They look to Gibson, they look to mere expectation, and they use mere expectation in furtherance of the business. And that is the standard the 8th District used here, and that is the standard this court must reverse as an improper basis and furtherance of the Van Fossen Fife prong. The Gibson case is, it's merely dicta. If you read the Gibson case, the case talks about Fife. It talks about Van Fossen, and then it talks about mere expectation, and it also points out that, by the way, we're not going to look at mere appreciation. Mere appreciation doesn't fly. We're not going to look at more likely than not, because that's an improper standard. The Van Fossen Fife standard, this court must say, survives Gibson. It doesn't need to overrule Gibson, because I believe the Gibson facts, drainage products, there was a question of fact of whether drainage products placed him in the position of molting explosion, a live hand grenade. The dangerous task in Gibson was not the required act, was not the required repair of that product. It was the explosion, the possible explosion of molten plastic that could go beyond the immediate work setting. This court needs to take a look at the 8th District's decision and ask, does it go beyond Gibson? It does. It goes beyond Fife and it goes beyond Van Fossen.
Mr. Wakefield argued that Randy Griffith, the supervisor, encouraged Mr. Costin to enter while the robot arm was running.
And I disagree with that wholeheartedly, because if you look at the record, and I've cited to the specific pages, Randy Griffith, as well as Mr. Lazare, never direct. They say people will get hurt. They never direct Mr. Costin to go in. And the issue with regard to the light curtain, Mr. Costin knew how to go around it. It was never his safety apparatus. It was never for his benefit. He had been at LTV Steel for 30 days, never had the light curtain one time. He knew how to avoid it. And he testifies to that, and I give you the citation in the record. With the limited time I have here, I'd like this court to take a look at the Van Fossen Fife prong and ask, does it survive Gibson's mere expectation dicta? Does it survive the 8th District's analysis here? The constitutional immunity provided the employers was based on a social contract. The workers' compensation system is for the acquiescence of injury. In Van Fossen, you said, we're not going to look for the failure to act. We're going to look to actions. We can't look at mere expectation, because even mere appreciation is not appropriate. What is in the thought process of the employee is not sufficient to meet the exception. This court needs to affirmatively direct that the Van Fossen Fife standard requires affirmative conduct by the employer when the employer has knowledge that injury and danger will flow from that, putting that person back into the work environment. There is nothing in this record that shows that CCPI ever directed Mr. Costin to go in and do his job while the robot is moving. That's the point here. The facts show that he could do the job in any way he wanted to do it as long as the robot wasn't moving. I ask this court to take a look again at the Constitution. Take a look at the section, Article 2, Section 35. This issue of the acquiescence, mere expectation, goes beyond the limited purpose of the exception. And we ask this court to reverse the 8th District on a basis of law and determine that there's no question of fact that CCPI directed Mr. Costin or did act to require Mr. Costin to be in front of that moving robot. And I believe I'm out of time.
You are.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mitchell. I apologize to counsel that the lights aren't working at the podium. They are working here, but you did very well without without seeing lights. Thank you. Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. The next